Hello, Internet. This is Ewan Spen, CSC Insight, and Eurovision again calling. Join us once more for our companion podcast, Eurovision Again, as we travel back to Baku, and Eurovision 2012. Yes, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, welcome. It's another companion podcast for Eurovision Again. Myself, Ewan Spence, the team at ESC Insight, and the team at Eurovision Again, all bringing you a little look behind the scenes, a little flavour of the world, of music, of national finals, and everything around the chosen year for their community watch-along again, that is Eurovision Again. Twitter.com/Eurovision Again, Twitter.com/ESC Insight, and of course, Twitter.com/Eurovision, because this can't be done without the support of the official website of the EBU and the broadcast partners at the Song Contest as well. Yes, 2012, the year where Loren basically swept the board with euphoria. The year where the Buranovsky Babushkis providing VT footage for every Eurovision retrospective from now right up until 2147. It's the debut of Valentina Minetta. It's the return of Montenegro with a Trojan horse jazz powerhouse about the 2008 financial crisis and more. As with previous editions, the companion podcast is going to bring you the music of the day. It's going to bring you some stories from the national final entries that didn't make it all the way to the grand final on a Saturday night in May, and more, the state of pop music, a look at some of history. But first, we are off to Baku, following Azerbaijan's victory with Running Scared the previous year in Dusseldorf. And with the contest being held in Azerbaijan, the ruling government was determined to use the opportunity to show off the best of the country with a brand new purpose-built stadium and facilities being built under a 70-metre by 35-metre-sized Azeri flag, which, for a brief moment, was the biggest flag in the world. Human rights organisations were just as determined to use the event to highlight the country's poor human rights record. The BBC's Steve Rosenberg summed it up wonderfully in his reporting at the time, and I'd like to quote from that. But it's not just the participants that are making the Eurovision Song Contest stand out. It is the politics too. In the run-up to the competition, international human rights groups have been accusing the authorities in Azerbaijan of trampling on democracy, stifling freedom of speech, and locking up political opponents. He finishes, "The government here maintains those criticisms are unfair and has accused the West of a smear campaign." 9 years later, the hosting of key cultural and sporting events continues unabated under lavish circumstances by countries who are repeatedly called out by organisations such as Amnesty International and the Human Rights Watch. This sports washing continues to exploit some of our great cultural moments. Okay, with that, let's have a quick glance at the rulebook and the contest. Two notable changes for 2012 compared to previous years. The first was the expansion of the number of countries in the grand final. Italy had joined in the previous year, but of course, with Germany hosting, the addition of Italy to the Big Five, knee Big Four, skipped around the issue of how many countries were going to be able to take to the stage on the Saturday night. Now we have the Big Five plus hosts in play for 2012. The rulebook is tweaked slightly to allow for a 26-strong grand final, the first of that size since 2003. Big Five hosts, 10 from semi-final one, 10 from semi-final two. Nicely balanced, and a system that's been used right the way through until, well, let's see what happens for 2022, because Big Five plus host, we're into that flag again. Okay, second day was the tweak to the voting window. Following analysis of voting patterns and how it didn't really change anything, the decision was made to switch away from having voting lines open from the start of the show right through. That's the case that you had in 2010 and 2011, and move back to a shorter voting window at the end of the performances. Does, of course, give you a little bit more excitement, a little bit notable in the show, and a point where you can go, right, start voting now. You know, you run that when you've done the ba-dum, ba-ba-ba-bum. Doesn't quite have as much televisual moments. That was the state of the contest. How about the state of pop? Over to AJ Clay.
The UK charts in the week of Eurovision 2012 were a veritable pick and mix of genres, and truly international, featuring Albanian, Greek Cypriot, Bahamian and Nigerian artists. At the top spot was Rita Ora featuring Tiny Tempa with R.I.P. Back in 2008, Rita auditioned for Eurovision Your Country Needs You, BBC One's selection show for the 2009 contest. She qualified, but then withdrew from the contest a few episodes later because she did not feel ready and thought the challenge wasn't for her. Her manager would later say that she told Rita that performing in Eurovision would hinder her chances of making it as a solo artist. Pop rock band Fun's party anthem We Are Young, featuring Janelle Monáe, held number two, while Canada's Carly Rae Jepsen's frothy Call Me Maybe was at number three. London singer-songwriter Alex Clare was too close at number four. The song grew in popularity in the March of this year, when it was used in an Internet Explorer 9 advert. Meanwhile, N-Dub's vocalist Tulisa had gone solo with Young at number 5. Umbrella-toting Rihanna asked Where Have You Been in a number 6 spot, while The Saturday's 30 Days spent only 1 week at number 7. San Francisco band Train committed a drive-by at number 8. Like Mons, the group have a liquid business venture with Save Me San Francisco Wine Company. Their range is named after their hits with Drops of Jupiter California Red, Soul Sister Pinot Noir and Hella Fine Merlot. Nigerian Afrobeat star Dabanj was channeling Dickens with Oliver Twist at 9. And rounding off the top 10 is the ever-looming presence of one-hit wonder Gotye, born Wouter de Backer in Belgium but living in Australia. He teamed up with New Zealand singer Kimbra on Somebody That I Used to Know, and his Peter Gabriel-like vocals were destined to dominate the airwaves for some time. Gotye himself got somewhat fed up with it, saying, "My inbox on any given day has at least 5 covers or parodies or remixes of it, and there's only so many times you can listen to the one song." Over in the album charts, Sussex indie band Keane's Strangeland held the top spot, while the self-proclaimed best band in the world, Tenacious D, rocked number 2 with Rise of the Phoenix. Jack Black has said the first song he enjoyed was ABBA's Take a Chance on Me, so perhaps an ESC appearance might be in their future. Ahead of her 2012 London Olympics performance, Scotland's Emily Sandé took Our Version of Events to number 3. In 2013, Emily won the European Border Breakers Award, presented at Dutch music festival Eurosonic Noorderslag, which often features Eurovision stars such as Common Linnets. Adele's 21 was at number 4. She's recently returned to the spotlight with a new single from her album 30, and remains a popular choice among the UK public as a possible Eurovision contestant. Ren Harvey's Through the Night was in at number 5, while indie folk artist Ben Howard's Every Kingdom took number 6. The earworm-inducing Gotye's Making Mirrors managed to reach number 7. Meanwhile, Ed Sheeran's debut album, Plus, was at number 8, signalling the start of his meteoric rise to sad boy guitar-based fame. Liverpudlian Rebecca Ferguson was in heaven at number 9. She was the runner-up in 2010's X Factor, losing out to Matt Cardle, who I'm sure has stuck in everyone's memories. And at number 10, alt-rock legends Garbage were not your kind of people. Singer Shirley Manson is a self-confessed Eurovision fan. She chose Waterloo on Radio 2's Tracks of My Years feature as one of her favourite songs that inspired her to get into music. Across Europe, the tight grip of Gotye was not so strong, with Somebody That I Used to Know only topping the charts in France and Greece. In Hungary, pop rock star Ákos Kovács was number 1 with Elúkelő Idegen, or Noble Stranger. Over in Lithuania, synth-pop group Lemon Joy urged us to run. Brazil's Michel Teló took Russia's pole position with Ai, Se Eu Te Pego, Oh, If I Catch You. With over 7.2 million sales, the catchy Latin hit was the sixth best-selling single of 2012. In Italy, Emma's Cercavo Amore was number one. She's something of an ESC veteran, having competed in Sanremo 2011, won Sanremo 2012, and finally represented Italy in 2014 with La Mia Città. Norway were vibing out to Senhit's best mate Flo Rida and his hit Whistle, while in Romania, Laurențiu Duță collaborated with Andreea Bunică on Shining Heart. Denmark's Shaka Loveless brought the reggae-tinged Tomgang, or Idol, to number one. Swedish multi-ethnic Melfest stars Panetoz asked us to dance a pausa. The song was covered with extra French lyrics by Congolese singer Jesse Matador, who you may remember as France's Eurovision entry from 2010 with Ale Ola Ole. Over in Turkey, Emre Aydın, MTV's Europe's Favourite Act 2008, and Gülden Mutlu sang about So Gudlash, or Cold Rooms. In Spain, Cali y El Dandy were at the top spot for a whopping 13 weeks with Yo Te Esperare. Dandy co-produced Despacito, the ever-present sound of the summer. Germany's punk bad boys Die Toten Hosen, a reference to a lack of activity in the trouser department, sang about Tage wie diese, days like this. Malta's homegrown Red Electric soothed souls with their guitar ballad Paul, while in Serbia, blues jazz king Dr. John urged us to get away. Ukraine's Svetlana was number one with Oblaka, or Clouds. She represented the country in Eurovision in 2009 with Be My Valentine, Anti-Crisis Girl. And in Ireland, Euro 2012 fever was growing, with the Dubliners teaming up with the unfortunately named Coronas and the Irish national team for The Rocky Road to Poland, a take on traditional song The Rocky Road to Dublin. Raising funds for the Irish Cancer Society, it beat Jedward to the top spot.
Wasn't a merry month of June, from our homes we started, left all there inside the pole, and we departed.
Hope within our hearts, we can win the trophy, we are all a part of Trapattoni's army.
Get behind the team, hear the Irish scream, come on you boys and green, Ireland's bouncing back again. We have got our trap, the cat is in the sack, we'll not forget you Jack, on the rocky roads of Poland, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Irish eyes are smiling.
AJ Clay there with the state of pop. How about the state of the national finals now? Because the 2012 national final season has, like many years, countless gems from past Eurovisions as well as future heroes. But there are some big names popping up here in the run up to the contest. Switzerland managed to go right back to the very beginning with a certain Liz Assia taking to the stage in an almost valedictory performance at the Swiss national final of C'était ma vie. An unabashedly traditional sound from the pen of Ralph Siegel and the strength that only a seasoned pro can bring. Perhaps this was the point to bow out of competitive appearances. That said, a big Paddington Bear hard stare at the Swiss selection committee, given that Ultra Natty had submitted My Love for consideration and it never even made it through to the televised round. Perhaps that sample of ABBA's Gimme 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 was just a little step too far. Those looking for names that will show up in future contests have some good choices as well. Following on from 2010, Sunstroke Project brought Superman to Old Melody Pentry Europa, trying to get another representation for Moldova. Alas, not to be in 2012, but don't worry, Mama, their time will come. Someone else's time who will come is Conchita Wurst, reaching the runoff in the national final in Austria with That's What I Am, losing out in a 49-51 split to the scurrilous track shitters Voki mit dem Popo. It was a straightforward disco banger for banger, and it would have been nice, but I think we can all agree that Rise Like a Phoenix was definitely the upgrade the world needed. Alyona Lanskaya won through the Belarusian selection with All My Life, but was subsequently disqualified following an investigation into vote rigging ordered by the Belarusian president. Light sound, who finished in second place, took the tickets. Lansgaea would top the jury in televote the following year to sing Celia in Malmo. No investigation was ordered. Molly Sandén, Sweden's junior Eurovision 2006 singer, was making her second of three appearances at Melodifestivalen. The breakup anthem, Why Am I Crying, finished fifth, her highest placing in her three appearances. While never actually making the contest itself, her vocal appearances in the Legend of Fire saga arguably made her one of the winners of the Eurovision 2020 season. Charlotte Pirelli also popped up in this year's Melody Festivalen with The Girl, although not making it through to the grand final. A musical return to Eurovision has not yet happened for Charlotte, but she did make it back through the commentary booth in 2019 on the anniversary of her victory in Israel 20 years previously. And so to Italy. Sanremo was chock full of star names, and I just want to flag up in covers night, I Who Have Nothing, covered by Irene Fornasieri, accompanied on guitar by Brian May. For various reasons, not least the fact that it was a cover and it was against rules, that wasn't going to Eurovision. But there were some star turns in here that would have been great choices. But of course, this is before the winner was given first refusal on the ticket. And the Italian music industry hadn't quite yet been sold on the power of Eurovision. So, rather than winner gets choice, RAI used an internal selection, but limited it to the acts who were appearing at Sanremo that year. So, taking little baby steps, and look how far they've come. So, out of all of that, Nina Zilli was selected. Curiously, though, she didn't take her Sanremo song Per Semper, which finished seventh, but instead she would grace the Baku stage with L'Amore Femmina and would eventually finish ninth. For the record, Emma Marone found victory at Sanremo in 2012 with the absolutely sublime Nonelli Inferno, which has everything you could ever want from a female Italian power ballad. Her turn at Eurovision would also come, but I'd rather remember Nonelli Inferno.
Sapesse quanto sia difficile il pensiero che per un giorno di lavoro c'è chi ancora più diritti di chi ha creduto nel paese del futuro. No, questo no, non è l'inferno, ma non comprendo com'è possibile pensare che sia più facile morire. Io no,
Emma on there as we take a look back through the national finals leading into the contest of Eurovision 2012. Of course, the world is still a tumultuous place, and Finn Ross Russell is here with his Eurovision Again time machine to take a look back at the world of 2012.
Baku 2012 was a lavish affair to say the least, with €60 million spent on the contest by host broadcaster ITV, plus an additional €100 million spent on the expedited construction of the Baku Crystal Hall. Despite the riches spent on the contest, 2012 was another difficult year for many economies still recovering from the 2008 global financial crisis, and the Eurozone was heading right into the eye of the storm. The Eurozone represents countries using the Euro, which includes all European Union member states except for the UK, Denmark, Poland, Czech Republic, Hungary, Croatia, and Sweden. In sharing a currency, these nations were entering into a fiscal union, which meant that the value of their currency was directly linked to the performance of their various economies. This meant that when the 2008 financial crash came about, and Eurozone nations' economies all face hard times, nations with stronger economies were held back in their ability to recover by nations with weaker economies. Nowhere was this more of an issue than Greece, whose government had gone into debts which reached €300 billion by December of 2009. By 2010, similar concerns had also arisen in Portugal, Italy, Ireland, and Spain. Italy and Spain would end up managing their finances themselves, with governments opting for strict austerity measures as a means of bringing down costs. Ireland and Portugal would receive Eurozone IMF bailouts in 2010 and 2011 respectively. Greece, on the other hand, required more dedicated assistance, with several bailouts and strict EU-imposed austerity measures which weren't always received positively by Greek politicians and public alike. This brings us to 2012, which started with credit rating agencies Standard & Poor's downgrading 9 Eurozone nations, including France, a sign of financial distrust in some of the world's largest economies. Around the same time, talks between the Greek government and their private creditors were stalling. In February, it was announced that the Eurozone economy as a whole was contracting by 0.3%, and in March, the unemployment rate across the Eurozone hit a new high of 10.7%. Throughout this whole period, the whispers kept spreading around both politicians and public alike. Could Greece become the first nation ever to leave the Eurozone? And then, in the typical fashion of Eurovision escapism, Baku 2012 came around, and for a week, Europe's eyes turned to Azerbaijan. Although Portugal didn't manage to qualify from its semi, Ireland and Greece did, providing two of my all-time favourite performances in Waterline and Aphrodisiac. They would go on to finish 19th and 17th respectively in the grand final, whilst Italy and Spain placed in the top 10. And from there, Loreen wasn't the only thing going up, up, up. By the time Malmö 2013 came around, Greece would be reclassified as an emerging market, and the remaining crisis nations were beginning to regain control over their financial sectors. Whilst it would be absurd to suggest that the success of Euphoria was in any way a factor in these matters, her winner was the face of a much-needed Eurovision Song Contest that inspired an austerity-hit European public, and perhaps even lit the fire of economic recovery across the continent.
The state of the world there from Finn Ross Russell in his time machine. We've had the state of pop from AJ Clay, the state of the national finals from myself, Ewan Spence, and of course, it's the Eurovision Again companion podcast, which means we've had all the contributions that we make bleeding into Eurovision Again, provided by the team there, the EBU, .tv, and of course the host broadcaster as well. Thanks all very much for watching. We're here every week with news and everything that's been happening over 7 days on the regular Insight News podcast. Do feel free to subscribe or follow us if you haven't already, and if you have, do consider leaving us a review in your favourite podcast service or directory. It helps other people find us. So that's that. Enjoy 2012. It was Euphoria. Of course it was. There was really no other song that was going to come close, but Russia did its best. For now, stay safe out there. Be kind to everybody. Keep washing your hands, face masks, all of that stuff out there. And we'll catch you back either at Eurovision Again in a month's time on the next ESC Insight podcast or whenever we bump into each other online. Ta-ra for now. Guitars, please. You've been listening to ESC Insight's Eurovision Again companion podcast for Baku 2012, hosted by Ewan Spence with AJ Clay and Finn Ross Russell. www.escinsight.com.